Hello, I'm Kendra.
And I'm August.
And you're listening to Book Dumb, the bookcast brought to you by a couple of dummies.
This week, we're talking about road trip novels. Now, are those books to read on a road trip? I mean, it could be, but we're focusing on books that contain road trips.
Yes.
Yeah.
And poor August had this fantastic idea that I just could not deliver on entirely.
So. I think that you'll be able to deliver. Don't sell yourself too short.
Okay. Just a disclaimer. Mine are very loose interpretation.
I mean, this is a very niche topic. Mm-hmm. Very myopic is not the right word, but it's a tiny selection of books that we could pick from. Definitely some that we've talked about before. I just really love a book that contains a good road trip.
Yeah, I think this is a really fun one. I when you brought it up, I was like, wow, I don't think I've ever read anything with a road trip in it. And then I like really thought about it and I was like, I for sure have. Mm-hmm. And so it's funny that like to you, the road trip aspect of these books stand out, where for me, I was like, whew, right over my head. And so it was a good challenge for me.
I'm glad that it was a good challenge. I think it just like also highlights kind of what we're focused on while reading. Like I've talked about this before, I love focusing on like location, time, and place while reading, and I feel like you get into like deeper themes and like consistent imagery throughout. Mm-hmm. I know you're the best at spotting religious imagery, so just shows how we're different readers.
Yeah, which is what makes life worth living, right? Yeah. Getting to know, I don't know what I was saying there.
I mean, everybody likes different things and notices different things, and that's okay.
That's it. But before we get into the episode, I want to know what you're reading right now.
Wow. Well, I just finished my third play by Tennessee Williams, and that's The Glass Menagerie. Mm-hmm. I went into this not knowing anything, and it was really, really cool. Definitely want to see this one staged. I feel like there's a lot that I miss because it's so focused on stage. It's so focused on stage direction and lighting and set design. So I'm going to watch it soon. I really enjoyed the play. It's not my favorite of his works, but I still really liked it.
I need to read A Streetcar Called Desire. That's
named Desire.
Thank you. See, I haven't read it.
It's fine. No, A Streetcar Named Desire is a really interesting play, mm-hmm. and it's different than the film adaptation. Yeah, what are you reading right now?
I actually just finished today Zadie Smith's Intimations, which was really good. I love Zadie Smith. I'm such a big fan of her in general, and I'm reading this actually for Jessica's book stack on Instagram's Tiny Book Challenge, which is a really fun challenge I'm excited about, and it was a tiny book, about 100 pages. I gave it a 3.5. Wasn't super stoked on it. I mean, obviously 3.5 is still a very strong rating, mm-hmm. but I was like kind of underwhelmed because I was like expecting Zadie Smith level stuff, and it was an essay is about being quarantined and different observations she's had over 2020. Right.
Okay. So maybe you had a little bit too high of expectations going into it just from your experience with her other work?
For sure. Like I've read a few of her other essays, not all of her collections of essays, but she writes lots of essays. And most of the time I'm like, this woman is so brilliant and no one should ever even try to write anything because she's perfection. Mm-hmm. And she is. That's all true. However, I didn't have that experience reading this collection.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I'm really bummed because I found out about the tiny book challenge like right after I finished The Glass Menagerie, and I'm like, fuck, I should have held off on that for like 2 days and then I could have included it, but it's fine.
Well, maybe in honor of Jessica, we can do an episode of books under 100 pages.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a great idea for a challenge, so props to her. Love it. Okay. Should we jump into this?
Let's do it.
So we each have 5 top picks, mm-hmm. as well as a handful of honorable mentions. I have some that I would like to read. Do you?
Sort of. I have one that's both on the list and one I want to read.
Okay.
So we will talk about why that's there.
Okay.
And then I actually want to read some of the things that are on your list.
Oh, okay. So we'll do TBR at the end.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's start with our honorable mentions. How many honorable mentions do you have?
I just have 3.
Okay, same. Would you like to start?
Sure. So the first one is The Road by Carmack McCarthy.
Nice.
It's a great book. I read it in high school, haven't read it since. Mm. But when the second you said road trip, I thought of one other book and this book, The Road.
Okay. I'm glad that it was an immediate one. I'll talk about that later. My first honorable mention is a book that I talk about all the time, so I'm not including it in my list, and that's Lolita. Mm-hmm. Don't hate me if you hate Lolita. Everyone likes different things, and we read things differently. Mm-hmm. But it is a road trip novel.
You are the only person I like to hear talk about Lolita.
Thank you.
And I truly mean that. Like, I think you have such a great grasp of what's actually happening there. And so,
you know, there's a lot of misreading out there, I would classify. Not that anyone's reading of texts is invalid mm-hmm. or is not valid. But people have strong opinions on this book, and I don't necessarily always agree with them, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Just don't attack me.
Yeah, obviously, depending on the experiences you've had in life, the person you are, you're going to react very differently to that book, mm-hmm. and so it's fair for you to have your own opinions about it.
Yeah. And, I mean, Vladimir Nabokov is one of the greatest writers of the 20th century, and I stand by that. What's your next honorable mention?
Born a Crime by Trevor Noah.
See, I did not think of this one as a road trip novel, but I love that it's here.
Well, the good thing about my list is that you're probably going to have that reaction to a lot of them, because I had to really think outside of the box. Mm-hmm. But this is for sure a road trip novel. He's traveling a lot, especially over South Africa. Mm-hmm. And there's one scene in particular I thought of where he's in a car when he's a little boy with his little brother and his mom, and scary things happen. Mm-hmm. But technically, that is a road trip.
And his mom just shows that she's the most badass and wonderful woman.
Yeah. That's like the main thing I came out of after reading that memoir. Mm-hmm. I was like, your mom is too powerful.
There's some really great interviews of them together.
Oh.
That came out after that book came out. And she's just as cool as you would expect. My next honorable mention is The Odyssey by Homer. Because you know what? It's an odyssey.
Yeah.
He's on a boat. He's going around. Sometimes he's on land.
So instead of a road trip, it's more of a boat trip.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Did you feel good about that one?
I did. Yeah. I was like, this is going to make the folks laugh out.
You know, you could describe The Odyssey as boats and hoes. Odysseus is the hoe.
While we're on these Odyssey jokes, can I tell you my ninth grade Odyssey project?
You read The Odyssey in ninth grade?
Yeah, which is brutal. Like, that shouldn't have happened, but yeah.
We read it in 10th grade.
Okay, I guess that's basically. But it was our end of the year project, and you had to make basically a scrapbook of, like, what Odysseus experienced and the themes and stuff.
Okay.
And I got a C, which I think is unfair, because I titled it, You Ought to See What's in This. And I presented it to crickets. No one appreciated my humor.
See, if I was there, I'd be in the back of the classroom, and I'd just be laughing my ass off, so.
And that's why you're my best friend. Like, no one else appreciates my dumb humor.
I love that title for a scrapbook so much. I hope that your mom still has it somewhere.
I don't know. Anne, let us know. Write in.
I need it.
Don't text me. Email the podcast.
What's your next honorable mention?
Sorry, Mom. The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. I just realized I don't know how to say that last name, but I'm sorry, Paulo. Sing to me, Paulo.
Ooh, this is what dreams are made of, you know?
Hey now. All right, hey now. This is my honorable mention. Let's refocus.
Okay.
Recenter. So this book has a physical journey, but I was also thinking of the spiritual journey that's involved. Obviously, lots of traveling. This is a very popular book. I think a lot of people have read it. It's been a long time since I've read it. But yeah, it's my honorable mention.
I've never read it, but I know that cover.
Yeah.
I see it everywhere. Yeah. My last honorable mention is American Gods.
Oh, yay.
Because Wednesday loves his car, and I love Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. That's 100% fair. And also lots of traveling there.
Yeah. Good Omens could also be considered a road trip novel, which is also by Neil Gaiman.
I'm sure. Yeah,
Second season coming.
Woo, I gotta watch that first season.
Oh my god, it's so good.
I know.
They're so cute together.
I for sure do. Ugh. You're so right. Okay.
I just love them. Okay.
Maybe I should get started so you can end with your number one last, because that's gonna be like the penultimate.
Okay, whatever you want.
Cherry on the top, but if you want to get started.
I have no preference. Let's go with yours, since I just shared my last honorable mention.
Okay. So my number five of road trip novels is Lord of the Rings, the original road trip medieval beautiful. I talk about this in our How Do You Not Like episode. I love Lord of the Rings. I especially like the first one. And if you have even seen the movies, or if you've read the books, even better, you know that all three of those books are just one long journey, one long trip. I think it's a magical, mystical, fantastic, phenomenal. What other words can I think of?
Fantastical.
I did say that word. That?
Cute.
Hobbit-filled adventure. I'm trying to think of anything different I can say about this book that has never been said before, but I don't think I could do that because it's Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
And I guess I could lump The Hobbit in there, too. That's all about traveling.
Yeah.
Albeit by foot, but what can you do?
Don't they also use boats and horses?
I guess it's true, they do. And I guess that there are the occasional carriage rides.
And then big trees.
Oh.
You know?
That's a good point. That's...
Merry and Pippin. Ents. My guys.
Those Ents.
I don't know.
Enormous something trees. Who knows? have I read the books? Who knows?
You have.
I have. I know that I have, but you can't tell it by the dumb things I say 24/7. But yeah, that's my number five.
Nice.
What's your number five?
My number five, very similar to the magicalness of Lord of the Rings. It's very fantastical, otherworldly, totally not rooted in American reality. Okay. And that's On the Road by Jack Kerouac, which that was sarcasm before. On the Road is not magical in the same way that Lord of the Rings is magical, but maybe some people would say magical in other ways. I'm one of those people. Kendra hates Jack Kerouac and is looking at me like she's gonna stab me in the fucking stomach, but that's okay because everyone likes different things. I picked On the Road for this because I do love this book. I feel like I've been very clear for my love for the Beat Generation, Jack Kerouac, and Allen Ginsberg. Not that Jack Kerouac was any better, both of them notorious pieces of shit. I would say most of the men in the Beat movement, and also women, but it was mainly dominated by men, were garbage. So let's just have that at the forefront, acknowledge the terribleness, and then go into nonfiction that just shows that terribleness even more. Why do I like these things? So On the Road is one of the main reasons why I wanted to move to San Francisco. You know, going to City Lights bookstore is just a great place and is very formative for me, so don't hate me. This book follows Kerouac and some of his friends going on road trips from the late 1940s through the early 1950s. It was originally published in 1957, so just a little bit after. Jack Kerouac wrote this in kind of a manic way, where he wrote it on just one continuous scroll, and there's very, very little editing, there's very little punctuation. And I actually, first time I read this, I had gotten the unedited original scroll while reading it, because I have always been this pretentious. Got this book when I was like 16, and I love it. And so it's just Kerouac and his buddies, all under different names. That's one way that fiction kind of intercepts the nonfiction here. I'm traveling around the United States by car and also by hitchhiking, which is in cars. this novel is broken into five parts, three of which focus on road trips with a character named Dean Moriarty, who is Neil Cassady in real life. And it's largely autobiographical, but the use of alter egos for Kerouac himself and his close friends, who all happen to be pretty much notable beats. A lot of the characters in this are like William S. Burroughs, Allen Ginsberg, Neil Cassady, Alan Carr? I'm forgetting his name. No, mm-hmm. Alan Carr is a comedian. There was this one guy, he's in the movie Kill Your Darlings, played by Michael C. Hall. It'll come to me in like 45 minutes. But all these people have alter egos or different personas that they're given in the text. So there's a little bit of anonymity there. Anonymity?
Yeah, anonymity. And now I can't say it.
Yeah, but highly recommend this text. If you're unfamiliar with the Beat movements, maybe don't start with this one because it is a lot to take on. Another book by Kerouac that I think could be considered a road trip novel is Big Sur, mm-hmm. which is also a beautiful one. I actually had the wonderful opportunity to read that while in Big Sur, which is just so cute. And that's a shorter one, easier to take on, and a pretty great introduction to Kerouac as well.
I enjoyed Big Sur more, but I wouldn't say I still enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I just would say my sister loves Big Sur. So okay. If you, maybe even if you read On the Road and don't like it, I would still recommend reading Big Sur.
Nice. And then you just get to hear about Big Sur, which who doesn't want to hear about Big Sur?
Yeah.
Beautiful. It's always on fire. Let's save it. What's your next pick?
A book, again, I've talked about a lot, but I feel like could never overhype it enough, and that's Howl's Moving Castle by Diana Wynne Jones. Obviously, I love this book. I read it this year for the first time, and so it follows Sophie, who lives in this magical kingdom where she's everyone in town, but she's heard of this wizard Howl who eats girls, or girls go missing when they're around him, and there's all this mystery tied around him. She gets cursed by an evil witch, the Witch of the Waste, to turn into an old lady. And so she basically travels. I mean, it's a moving castle. I feel like that. I should have just started there. There's a moving castle. That's the road trip element.
She travels before getting to the moving castle as well.
Right. I was walking you through that where I was like, she travels kind of to the moving castle.
Oh, so you're walking me through Sophie walking through life getting to the moving castle.
Exactly. And it's truly one of the most engrossing and just like purely innocently enjoyable books I've ever read in my life. It's a book I'm gonna read again. I want to read it already again, but I'm like making myself wait. Also, the movie,
fantastic.
Honestly,
it's so good.
The movie is so fucking good. Christian Bale is Howl.
Yeah,
like,
and also in the original Japanese version as well, like the not dub version, it's still fantastic.
Oh yeah, highly recommend both. I mean, any Studio Ghibli film is gonna knock it out of the park. Yeah. I do think Howl's Moving Castle is the best one.
That's one of my favorites. It's like that and Spirited Away are tied.
Yeah.
And also Poco Rosso.
Kiki's Delivery Service.
Cute.
Totoro.
Oh, I love Totoro so much. Ponyo.
Oh, so there's so many.
There's so many good ones.
Princess Mononoke. Yeah.
Honestly, not my favorite. I think it's a little overhyped.
Oh, I love that one.
I love it still, but in the hierarchy of Ghibli movies.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Howl's Moving Castle takes the cake for me as both a road trip novel. Well, not, I guess not takes the cake, because it's not my number one. as a fun fantasy. And it's just like so much about self-discovery and first impressions and trusting your intuition, discovering yourself, challenging yourself, being kind to others. Like, I think it's a book everyone, to an extent, should be required to read. It's a book, like, I feel like parents should read with their kids, because there's a lot of, like, moral lessons in it. But also, it's a book that values, like, resourcefulness, ingenuity, humor above anything else. And those are just so such valuable traits.
Nice. I mean, I love the movie, and I've been dying to read the book ever since you told me about how great it is. And definitely need to get to it soon.
Yes.
So good.
Okay. That brings us to, what's your fourth one?
My fourth one is one that I have not read for a while. Just going to say that. And I put it on this list because it's one that I really want to reread. And that's Life of Pi by Jan Martel. This book came out in 2001 and has a spectacular film adaptation of it. I think I saw the movie before I read the book. And I was blown away. Like, it's so good. I have it on DVD. I know that nobody has DVDs anymore, but I do. And it's one of the few ones in my collection. And it's just absolutely stunning imagery to look at. So just for some background, after a shipwreck where his entire family sadly perishes, Pi and a tiger, whose name is Richard Parker, survive on a lifeboat for 227 days. And it's just the two of them on this lifeboat. At the beginning of the book, we get into Pi's childhood. You learn a little bit more about him and his family. Good foundation for how he's able to survive this 227 days on a small life raft with a Bengal tiger named Richard Parker. Which, again, the tiger's name is Richard Parker, and there's more to that. But this is just a beautiful, beautiful book. I was completely blown away. Again, I'm pretty sure I saw the movie first, and I still really enjoyed this book. This was one that I read while I was in high school, and I would say that it was pretty formative. I learned a lot about philosophy in it. I was at the time like learning more about like different periods of philosophy and different like methods of philosophy. I don't know if methods of the philosophy is the correct way to say it.
Methodology
of philosophy. I don't know
what I'm saying.
Just different forms of philosophy, and I feel like this was a great introduction to just different ways of thinking. There are moments during this text where it is like, from what I remember, like pretty spiritual. And I think that coincides with the beauty of nature and the ocean that's presented here. This is definitely, if you're scared of being shipwrecked, if you don't want to be a castaway, maybe don't read this one, because definitely there's some anxiety-inducing moments.
I want to read that book so bad, but definitely, I would feel claustrophobic. That's, I think, one of the reasons I haven't seen the film is, like, I don't like watching, like, open water movies. Same with, like, space movies. I get really claustrophobic. Although, I have seen Gravity and Interstellar, and they're fantastic.
See, I would compare this to Gravity because it's literally just the actor who plays Pi on this boat. And, I mean, he's with a CGI tiger, but, like, he's essentially acting by himself.
Which That's amazing.
It's spectacular. Like, it's one of the better movies that I've seen in recent years. And I saw it in theaters, and I'm very glad that I did. Would watch again. Again, I have not seen it in probably 6 years. Mm-hmm. So it's been a minute, but from what I remember, it was really, really great.
Yeah, it looked great.
Yeah. And so that is number four.
You ready for number three?
Always.
Okay. Euphoria by Lily King. I love this book. This was my favorite book I read in 2020. With some distance, obviously, I still feel very strongly about it. I still think it's a 5 out of 5. I do still have the same criticisms I had about the voyeuristic nature of the book. And so if you haven't listened to, like, our 2020 favorites, it follows three anthropologists. It's actually loosely based on the life of Margaret Mead, who I have slowly become obsessed with because, wow, what a gal. And so it follows these three scientists, these three anthropologists, which I suppose is a branch of science. And they are in New Guinea, but also, like, traveling all over the world to study indigenous cultures and live with communities of indigenous people, which is obviously problematic to a degree. I think the main character, her heart's in the right place. But events unfold, and it does read, in my opinion, as a criticism of the pressure in Western science at that time in, like, the 20s to basically be the first to discover these people, which is, I mean, you know.
We're using discover in quotes.
Yeah, I'm using discover as, like, that's not correct. Yeah. These people exist, and that land didn't need to be discovered, and to report back. And so it does, in my opinion, read as, like, a very harsh critique of that rush. And Margaret Mead has been very critical of that rush and acknowledged her role in it. And it's also, like, a fun, sexy, little steamy. Ooh. Steamy is probably not the right word. There's a love triangle involved.
Okay.
The concept of sexuality is explored, especially for a married woman who is not just attracted to men. So that's a really big role. It plays a big role, but I chose it as a road trip novel because although they are never in a car, they are constantly in boats. Mm. So it is a boat trip novel, just like The Odyssey.
And Life of Pi.
What? Should we just retitle this Boat Trip?
Well, that's my only one that's a boat trip, so we can't do that.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Then we can't just, like, make this about me.
I mean, you're going to do it anyway. Okay, well, again, one that I need to read that you've been hyping up for, like, 7 months now.
Yeah, I hope I haven't overhyped it. I really love it.
I mean, I'm excited to read it. Yeah. I'm probably going to listen to the audiobook coming up soon.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
Yeah. I feel like it's a good one for an audiobook. Or would you recommend a physical copy?
I think an audiobook would be fine. It's not necessarily dense. It's super short, too.
Yeah. So. Seems like a good, like, you're going on a little road trip. You have a long drive.
Mm-hmm.
Good for that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, my next pick is a little different. It's a different time period than what I usually go for, like 250 years a little early for me, and that's Don Quixote by Miguel de Cervantes, and I love this book. This, don't be shocked that a book from 1605 can be so fucking funny. Honestly, I don't know if I've ever laughed harder reading a book that is a work of fiction, maybe Catch 22. That's the only thing. Catch 22 and Master and Margarita are, like, similar laugh quality and quantity to Don Quixote, which is insane because those books came out in the 1900s, and this is the 1600s. So Don Quixote, I'm mainly focusing on part one, follows the travels and chivalric journey of Don Quixote and his squire, Sancho Panza, and they travel around 1600 Spain and act as knights and a squire in a time where knights and squires no longer exist in Spain, or I think anywhere else in the world, definitely not anywhere else in the world. So they're traveling around trying to be chivalric, or at least Don Quixote is trying to be chivalric. Whether that actually happens I'm not going to say, but I will say that he does fuck up a lot of shit for a lot of people, even though he has good intentions. And this one is just like really fucking funny. What else can I say? So they're traveling around Spain. Sorry, this is just like all scatterbrained. They're traveling around Spain, and Don Quixote's main goal is that he would like to be the knight errant, which is like the one of the greatest knights living in that time period, known for their chivalric deeds, their loyalty to the ruler at that time, their dedication to their maiden or their damsel, who's Dulcinea in this text. Mm. Don Quixote is not fully aware of the world around him. In fact, he often...
Okay, so I know I was just in the middle of talking about Don Quixote, but surprise, I was editing it a little bit later and our microphone started really acting up. So here we are again, re-recording this last portion.
Yay!
Yay! And we're doing it over Zoom. We're trying out Zoom because we've had some issues with our microphones lately, trying to up that quality the best way that we can. So if there's a difference and it's annoying to you, sorry, we're just trying to make things work.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so again, sorry if we repeat anything that we've talked about before. This is our second time recording this portion of the episode. So
yep.
You know, that's just how things are. Sometimes we're doing our best. But to get back to Don Quixote, if that's okay with everybody, something that I really enjoy about Don Quixote is that while he's on his travels, he is constantly bringing up fiction that he has read, specifically stories of knights of the past, and he's bringing these stories into his own lived experience. So he's viewing the world around him through the lens of this chivalric romances that he has read and that he has been obsessed with for a very long time. So he's bringing in all these stories of knights, they're interpreting his, or they're influencing his interpretation of the world around him, which I think is very, very cool. One great example of this that I think a lot of people know, even if you haven't read Don Quixote, is the scene with the windmills. So there is a scene in Don Quixote where they are traveling, it's Don Quixote and Sancho Panza, they're traveling in the countryside, and Don Quixote sees these windmills. And instead of seeing them as windmills, he sees them as giants that he must fight and beat because they're terrorizing the land of his beautiful Dulcinea. And he is trying to be chivalric. He wants to be the knight errant. So it is his duty as a knight in his reality to fight these giants. But they're windmills. Sancho Panza sees them as windmills, and he's like, what the fuck are you doing? But, you know, like many of us, Sancho Panza is just like, I'm going to chill and just see what happens. Let's see how this is going to unfold. So there is that. I think it's really cool. Definitely gets into how accountable Sancho Panza is for the actions of Don Quixote, because it's pretty apparent that Don Quixote is not fully with it. He isn't obviously viewing the world as it is in front of him. He's having these hallucinations of giants instead of windmills. Sancho Panza just kind of sits back and enjoys the ride, but also gets his ass beat throughout the journey. So just something to consider. I think this is a really fun road trip, especially because we have the different perspectives of what's going on in the Spanish countryside for this time.
Yes, I do really want to read Don Quixote.
Yeah, it's such a fun one. For people who are interested in picking up a copy for this, I highly recommend the Norton Critical edition of this book, because there's some great essays and guides in the back. When I was reading this book in graduate school, this is the one that my professor insisted that everyone have.
Cool.
Yeah.
That will help me. I zoomed out a little bit. As you were talking about Don Quixote, it was making me think of Canterbury Tales, mm-hmm. and how that is, like, to me, the OG road trip novel, and I should have included that on my list, and I did not. So Chaucer's
thinking.
I'm a fool. We all know that.
But a beautiful little fool, though.
It's my Zelda.
We love it. From the Canterbury Tales, do you have any favorites?
The Wife of Bath is just the funniest. That's so funny. Also, there's like this, he's not called a preacher, it's called something else. He's like a religious man. Can't remember.
Partner's Tale?
Yes, thank you, partner.
I have one of the Canterbury Tales, or a portion of it, on vinyl, because I have gone through a phase where I just like buy the $1 literature ones available at a local record store. And that's one that I have. And honestly, it's wasted on me. I should give it to you, someone who like actually likes that period of literature.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I would take it.
Your birthday's coming up, so it might just get thrown in there as a little extra present. Your birthday will have passed by the time that this is out, I think.
We're coming from the past into the future. That's what
boats feed on from the past. It's a Gatsby episode.
Surprise!
Yes, everything I've ever wanted. So what's your next pick, Kendra? What's your number two?
Okay, so I think as I've established earlier in the episode, a month ago when we originally recorded it, is my list is unusual. So my next one is actually going to be Frankenstein by Mary Shelley. Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of my all-time favorite, woo indeed. It's so good. And the reason I see it as a road trip novel is one, because we open up on a boat where Dr. Frankenstein is trying to, he's been running away for a long time, for years, and his decisions put him on a course where he needs to flee for his life because he made some bad choices. But also traveling is so essential to the creature's growth. He really forms his sense of self through his travels, through seeing, like experiencing the English countryside and the different people who live in it. Obviously, people have very distinct reactions to who he is, and that helps form his identity. And I think a lot of that has to do with like the places they are and like the sheltered. Like, I'm thinking of one instance where we get like this example of like sheltered country life, and then that's contrasted to like what quote unquote city people might react. Essentially, it's all bad, but very different reactions. Mm-hmm. And I know it's unusual. It is traveling by foot. I also think because Dr. Frankenstein is like very rich, you get to see like traveling luxury with him, in contrast to the creature who has literally no worldly possessions, having to travel by foot for his whole life.
Mm-hmm. And also having to travel while trying to remain hidden.
Yes. And he's a very big guy, so
yeah,
hard to do. And then I also think it's an emotional journey.
So that's I would agree with that.
Yeah. Thank you. It's kind of my cop-out pick, but I was like, it fits.
It's a solid pick. I love Frankenstein. We're going to have to do an episode on that for October, for spooky season.
I think it's coming up.
Mm-hmm. As well as probably some other spooky picks.
I'm so excited for our fall episode lineup. It's going to be good, guys.
It's the time of year where we really thrive, so we're ready for it. Do you have any other comments on Frankenstein, or should we continue on?
I think we can continue on. I think that's all I have for Frankenstein. Because I have a lot to say about my number one pick. So I'll save it for that.
I'll hurry up with my number two then. This is a book that I talk about a lot. I am always talking about Patricia Highsmith somehow because it's great. I love Patricia Highsmith. And my number two is The Price of Salt by her. It's also known as Carol. If you've seen the film Carol with Cate Blanchett and Rooney Mara, that is the adaptation that I'm talking about, but I'm talking about the original text. Pretty solid adaptation, though. Really love the film, really love the book. So Price of Salt was originally published under the pseudonym of Claire Morgan as the author instead of Patricia Highsmith. Patricia Highsmith was really scared of being deemed a lesbian book author during the time in which she released this novel, which came out in 1952. And because her own life is used as reference for characters and events throughout this novel. So just keep that in mind while reading it, that this is a book by a queer woman relating to her own experience as a queer woman in the 1950s in the United States. And so this novel follows the life of Thérèse Belvedet. I actually don't remember how to pronounce her last name, so we'll just say Thérèse, and her meeting Carol Aird, who she is instantly enchanted by, because how can you not? I always just picture Cate Blanchett for this because I did see the movie first, and wow, I'm enchanted by her. The two, after spending some time together in New York and New Jersey, go on a road trip out west that goes as far away, I believe, as far as Utah, and they're traveling around because Carol is in the middle of getting a divorce and wants some time away from home. They're also, you know, two queer women living in the United States during this time. So using that road trip as time for them to be alone and get to know each other without the outside world really intruding in on them. Yeah, it's a good one. I really like it.
It's such a great movie. I mean, I haven't read the book, but I love the movie.
Book is also solid. I know it's available. I'm pretty sure it's available on Hoopla if you want to listen to the audiobook for it.
Cool. I do want to read it. I know you were saying it's kind of like a wintry, Christmassy read.
Yeah, because a lot of it takes place. So like there is a whole bit with Carol and Therese around Christmas time in New Jersey. There's snow. They get a Christmas tree. So I always associate it with that time of year. They're also going on a road trip during the more wintry months. So it's like a nice, like cold, cozy read. And it's also, I don't know if this is a spoiler, but we have talked about many a times about how LGBTQ plus narratives also often have really sad endings. I don't know if that can be said for this book, but ultimately it's up to the reader.
I like that. Okay. Interesting.
So I'm dying to know, even though we've already recorded this and I know what your number one is.
Yes.
What's your number one?
Okay. Again, a little unusual because I technically haven't finished this book because it's massive and it's a collection of essays and I'm reading the essays out of order. And that's Anthony Bourdain's newest book that he wrote with his former assistant who assembled it posthumously and also did a bit of editing because it's just a collection of his essays throughout the years. Nothing specifically written for this book quite yet, and it's called World Travel, An Irreverent Guide. And so actually, fun fact, not fun at all, actually really sad fact, is that they met just a few weeks to start planning this book, just a few weeks before he died by suicide. And so they really just had like kind of the bare bones of it planned out. And she, Lori Wolliver, kind of saw it as her mission to really bring it to life because Anthony was so excited about this book. And I'm also very excited about this book. I've only read, I think, about five of the essays. And the introduction did make me tear up because Anthony Bourdain was such a gift to this world and continues to be through his legacy. And what's interesting about this book is it's not, you know, when you pick up like a travel book, it's not like, oh, a travel guide of like where you should go and what you should do when you're there. It's really about his own experiences, and it's a collection of some of his favorite places and fond memories he has, rather than being like, go to this restaurant and then do this activity. So it is very personal to Anthony. And also there are people who write essays about Anthony and like their memories they have. And it's just a beautiful collection. Okay. And I actually haven't read any of the essays that were written I haven't read any of the essays written by anyone other than Anthony, just because when I dove in out of curiosity, I just picked the places like I was interested in traveling to. But it's really good. The introduction specifically just like, I think perfectly captures just like who Anthony was to the whole world. Like so important, but like he was such a respectful world traveler. And Lori Wolliver, the editor and co-writer, said that the reason they chose An Irreverent Guide is because although Anthony was known for being an incredibly respectful traveler and being open to learning, understand he's a guest in other countries, he's not the most PC dude. As we know from Parts Unknown and just from his other works. And I know August read his memoir, Kitchen Confidence. Oh,
so good.
Yeah. And so she thought that title perfectly captured who Anthony was and this dichotomy that existed within him of living to be kind and bring respect and acknowledgement to other people's cultures and histories. But also he's so true to himself and can kind of be, you know, say some things that aren't the best thing. And that's where I think the book definitely benefits from an editor, because when he says something that is just based on his experience, she can come in there and be like, well, like, these are the facts. And so you'll get like the travel-y stuff from her, and then you get Anthony's individual experiences.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I really, really want to read this one, especially there's been a lot of backlash against the documentary that has come out on him, and I don't believe I'm going to see it anymore. I was really, really looking forward to that, but just can't get behind some of the stuff that they've done. So really, really need to read this book now, because Tony is king. Love him. Acknowledge the problematic shit that he said. I know in the past we've talked a lot about like Kitchen Confidential and some of the issues with that. Mm-hmm. But wow, I love Tony.
Yeah, it's so great. And I think it's great for me to read slowly. Like, I think I'm going to spend like a couple of years just reading an essay at a time. Nice. And I can start daydreaming about traveling again in the future.
Yeah. Oh, I love Tony. Yeah, I've been watching Parts Unknown throughout quarantine, and I'm almost done with all of them. I've just been like skipping around, and oh, I miss him.
I love that show so much.
We can go on YouTube and watch this show from the 90s, the fashion, the attitude. Love to see it.
Peak. He really is like, he was the representation of the 90s, I think, in human form.
There's like a leather jacket that's like a blazer that he wears throughout a couple episodes of the one from the 90s. And I'm just like, Tony, that in your earring, it's calling. I want to emulate that exact outfit. I can't pull it off like Tony can.
I really think you could, August. I legitimately think you could.
I'll look like fucking Neo and not nearly as cool.
Oh my god, I'm trying not to laugh too hard into the microphone. That's so funny. No,
it's okay. I'm a dark academia goth, not a leather goth, and that's just how it is, and I'm okay with that.
Oh my god. Okay. What is your number one road trip novel?
It's a fun one. Just kidding. It's sad and really violent and difficult to read at times. And that's The Road by Cormac McCarthy. I actually picked this as my number one because this is a book that I desperately want to reread. I have not read this book since I was in high school, which was like a decade ago now, pretty much. I probably read this book like 8 or 9 years ago. So it's been a while. And this is the book that really got me interested in American Gothic, specifically in reading more works by Cormac McCarthy. I think I was reading this around the time where No Country for Old Men was released in theaters. And I feel like that was just the combo I needed to set myself up for really loving depressing shit all the time. So thank you, Cormac McCarthy. I appreciate it. So as I said, this is one that I really want to reread. Just going to warn people before this one, this is a post-apocalyptic book that follows a young son and his father on foot as they travel across post-apocalyptic United States. So it's bad shit's happening like everywhere they go. They're really trying to survive. While traveling, they encounter cannibals, gangs of desperate people who are trying to survive, and just like a lot of monstrosity. I know when we recorded this episode originally, I was thinking of a really, really gross scene, and Kendra thought of a completely different scene that we had both forgotten about them. And where I was like, this scene is the most disgusting scene. And you're like, oh, is it the one in the basement? And I was like, no, it's the one with the spick. And so there's just like a lot of disgusting shit happening here. So be wary of that before jumping in. I do think that this is a great novel. I think this is a great introduction to Cormac McCarthy, as it was my introduction to him. And feel like it's turned out well. I've read a couple of his books since, and I'm obsessed with American Gothic now. So a great starting point. Also, I feel like this is one that's definitely like an easier Cormac McCarthy book to read. It's definitely the easiest of his works that I've read. And that's just, you know, understanding like what's going on, being compelled and interested in the story. Probably reads about the same as No Country for Old Men. So just putting that out there. It's really gross. It's really disgusting. And I absolutely love it.
I will say I do really love The Road, and I notoriously don't enjoy McCarthy that much.
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, it's just different enough from some of his other works, still focusing on the evils of human nature and people presenting their worst selves and acting on their worst instincts. But I think having it in that post-apocalyptic setting is really nice and different for him.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
The next step is getting you to like Blood Meridian.
I mean,
don't pretend like you fucking like that book. We read it together. I remember.
I wasn't going to pretend. I was going to be like, I liked elements of it. I liked all the literary allusions.
Okay. Whatever you say.
I did. That's it.
That's okay. Everyone likes different things. I'm not going to push you into reading any more McCarthy.
Yeah, that's good.
He's right here on my shelf, right behind me.
I was going to say, he's probably going to come out with like a new book and then be like, you got to read it.
Well, he just released Child of God relatively recently, and I really need to get a copy of that.
Yeah, I couldn't find a copy of that the last time I went to Green Apple. But
yeah, typically they only have like new copies of that, so I'm waiting to find a used. Okay. But I also still have to read. I have on my shelf All the Pretty Horses and The Crossing, and I've never read either of those, and I need to maybe probably read those first before I buy any more of his works.
All right.
Yeah. So those are our top five picks. Should we get into TBR at all?
Yeah, I think you have a couple, right?
Yeah, I have two.
Okay, go ahead. Okay. I have.
Do you have any?
I have one, I think. Okay. One where you read.
Oh, okay. Well, my list, I have Under the Skin by Michael Faber. I've seen the film adaptation of this. I don't know how similar it is, but it's about a succubus, which is fucking tight. And also the movie is probably one of the more depressing films I've ever seen. Really, really fucked up. So saw that at the local Castro Theater here in San Francisco, though, which was so fun. Missed that place. And then also my second book that I would like to read is We All Loved Cowboys by Carol Benzimon. I don't really know too much about this. I know it's two, I believe, queer women traveling. I think it might take place in Brazil, but I could be wrong about that. I want to go into both of these knowing as little as possible. So sorry for the lack of detail.
I just remembered, okay, I have two, but I have a question because I don't know. Have you read The Divine Comedy?
By Dante?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Could that count as a road trip novel?
Oh, yeah. Okay. The Seven Layers of Hell? Oh, yeah.
I was just thinking, and I was reorganizing my bookshelf. I really want to read it. I've never read it. I've read excerpts, but like never completion. So I'm going to add that to my TBR. But the one I was going to say was Don Quixote, which I know you've been talking about for a long time. I want to read it. It sounds hilarious. And also, I was just telling August like yesterday, 2 days ago, who knows? I think yesterday, I really just need to start reading classics again. Where like there was a time in my life when I was only reading classics, and I have not picked up like a classic canonical English literature book probably in over a year.
I mean, it's hard to, especially when we're like working and everything. And also, I know that we've like been dealing with this, like while we were in school, we pretty much only read canonical older fiction. And so when we graduated, we were like, we need to read contemporary fiction. We want to like get not caught up, but you know, have some of that in our lives. And now it's almost like flipped where we both want just like an older book that we can study seriously. Not that we can't study contemporary fiction seriously, but something a little different.
Yeah. It's just tough. You're totally right. It's hard to get back into the habit of that. I'm still working on finding the right balance.
Yeah. And as soon as you figure that out, please let me know, because same. Knowing us, you'll figure it out first.
I was actually just going to say the opposite.
Well, someone's in a denial mood today.
I'm not. I'm not. That sounded way whinier than I meant it to be. Sound like a child. A
big baby.
I feel like it. Okay. that was our road trip episode. Mm-hmm. Great idea on August.
Thank you. Thank you. Do you know what we're talking about next week?
Okay. So next week, I'm very excited. So this week was August's idea, which was such a great idea. And then next week is one that August is really excited about. So I'm just shouting out August for the creativity here.
Thank you. Thank you. Work is life.
So next week we're going to do translated works. And so what by translation, we mean languages other than English, because we are English speaking, we read English novels. And so works that have been translated into English.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this one because it made me realize I was going through books and it made me realize how little, I haven't read many translations, and most of them are either French translations or Russian. So still very, very white, very male centered. So if anyone has any great recommendations, even before this episode comes out, please send them our way. And you can do that by sending it to us on Instagram, which is Bookdom Podcast. You can also find us individually. You can find me, August, on Instagram at Iggy Poop.
And me, Kendra, at Kendra Lapp.
And we really appreciate you listening to this. If you enjoyed this episode, even though we did disrupt it halfway through, please let us know. You can let us know by messaging us on Instagram or leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. Sadly, Spotify does not have reviews, but you can leave a written or star review on Apple Podcasts. We really appreciate them, especially those 5-star reviews.
Yeah, those always make our day. So again, thank you so much for listening. We will catch you next week.
Yeah, and we hope you're having a great day.
Bye.